You ever wonder about the people in family photos or ever try to ask who these people really were? Every face is a narrow escape or a love story that almost didn't happen. Your family stories are hidden in plain view. You just haven't accessed it yet. There are versions of these rebels and dreamers before life told them who they needed to be. And I'm not talking about the shiny stories everyone knows. I'm talking about the soul-crushing experiences with heartbreaks and real loss. You gotta preserve these stories now. So contact thevietnamstorybank.com today. No polish, just raw, recorded, beautiful history that makes you sit up and hold your breath. We dig it all up, record it, and hand it back to you. Safe, unerased, untouchable, and unforgettable. Don't let silence have the last word. Go to vietnamstorybank.com today. Make sure your family's stories are recorded. Welcome to the Vietnamese podcast. Today, I am in studio with Khan, who runs Made by Ngo, Made by NGO, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
And we met recently at a dope-ass Hennessy party.
Yeah, yeah. That was fire.
It was a fire. Party was fire. It was Hennessy, and it was a dead party. And then we, after that party, we went to get some food in Koreatown, and we just started talking, and I found you to be really interesting, your point of views about fashion and about the speed of branding and all of that, you know, all the work that you've done in the last few years in LA. So here we are in studio in the Arts District in DTLA. So welcome to the Vietnamese podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me, and welcome to the Friendly Market.
It's actually called the Friendly Market.
Yeah, it's called the Friendly Market.
His spot is called the Friendly Market.
Yeah, yeah, welcome.
And you are originally from Ohio, right?
Yes, Columbus, Ohio. I moved to Columbus, Ohio when I was four.
From where?
Hue, Vietnam.
Oh, yeah, wow. Yeah, yeah. Do you have any memory of it?
Not much. I have memory when I went back. I went back in high school, so yeah. I had a little bit of that memory, but as a child, no, like, memory.
So 4, you went to Columbus, Ohio. Little known fact is my family, I think, spent a few months in Columbus, Ohio as well.
Oh, wow.
In the 70s, when we had just moved from Chambersburg, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
We had family in Columbus, Ohio, and we were scoping it out. So.
Oh, wow. But
is there a big Vietnamese community there?
It's a decent size. Yeah, yeah, it's decent. I think what makes the Vietnamese community big in Ohio in general, I think the nail business is really well. So my family has my brother, my older sisters, and them, they do nails. But I think the nail business got really big, got booming. So then you see a lot of Vietnamese people moving there as well.
Yeah. And is there a big community in Columbus, Ohio?
Yeah, yeah. It's nice, decent community. And my sister was in college, my sister was a president at VSA, so it's Vietnamese Student Association. So that's really cool too. So you do see the Vietnamese community also within college at Ohio State as well.
What do you think got you initially into fashion?
I think what it was is like, I tell people, I said, sometimes what makes me a great designer is growing up being poor. I think when you're poor, you come from nothing, you're always using your imagination, right? You're always looking at how other people would have a certain pair of sneakers, and you're like, oh, I would have wore it this way, I would have did it that way. And I think within my community and my friend circle, I noticed that my side hustle or the way I made my money was customizing and making clothes. And I think that was really what pivoted me from doing all the other stuff that I've seen around this.
All right, let's just get into this because I think that's a very important thing. You literally were customizing clothes for like friends.
Yeah.
And that's how you like side hustled. That's how you made your money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And explain like exactly how that goes down and how old were you and like how does that opportunity come to somebody?
So I think when I was in, I would say in high school, I would just paint t-shirts. And then I grew up around a very urban community. So sneakers was really heavy into our aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And then I just started painting shoes for fun, right? I think the fun part is growing up being an artist, knowing how to do art and draw. I felt like I wanted to make outfits that stood out, you know? And I remember my friend Mike down the street from me, his mom was also Vietnamese. And I remember I used to give her bandanas for her to sew on top of these t-shirts for me. So then she was just like, what is this? I was like, you know, it's like a trend during that time, listening to Dipset and stuff like that. I was like, oh, this is cool. And then, you know, I just knew that I can make a shirt, customize it less than, I guess, 12 to 15 bucks. I could sell it to someone, customize, one-on-one, you get $50, $60, $65.
Really?
Yeah. So after a while, I was just like, oh, wow, this is adding up. And then I learned a little bit about reselling when I would buy certain shoes. I'll wear a few times and I'll sell it, right? I'll find some kid that's around my size. Like, yo, I just got these new shoes, but I already wore it. And then I would buy new shoes with that. And I think that was also a big part of, like, when you're selling fashion or I call selling confidence, you got to also look like you're up on top of all the latest trends and sneakers and stuff like that. So, yeah, I would wear a pair of shoes maybe 5-6 times and then I'll sell it. And then I'll go buy some more other shoes just because I want to keep myself like looking like a trendy person, a person that can sell you an outfit that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
I recently began to recognize how little I know about fashion.
Yeah.
Because I just grew up very basic. I still just very classic, very basic colors and everything. But I started hanging out with some people who looked like they really thought about what they wear, but things are like oversized or they look a certain way. And you know that they're not just like doing this willy-nilly or they're just guessing. You feel like there's a thought to what they're doing. And I really recognized that recently. And I want to ask you, what do you think dictates and guides good fashion? When you look at it and you're like, that person knows what they're wearing. They're just not like randomly at this.
Right.
How do you know? How do we know that as regular people?
I think when you look at someone, you know it's good fashion. It's like, it's really weird. It's like if you come from a culinary background,
yeah,
and you just see how the way the chef just cut the meat,
right,
and how they prepare the pan, and you're like, oh, this person knows what they're doing. And sometimes in fashion, it's not about really the price of your outfit. It's how they put it together,
yeah,
right? Like sometimes you'll look at someone and be like, damn, like the jeans, the way how it just fit the boots and that certain tee, the length of that t-shirt with the boots and I'm sorry, with the jeans and the certain jacket they selected, you can just tell. It's just like a sense of like, oh wow, this person knows what they're doing or they have good taste. It's like when you find a guy that's in a car, right? It's just the way how the car stance and looks. It don't have to have like the most expensive wheels or it don't have to be an expensive car, but you just see the car and you can say like, oh,
okay,
he has good taste.
So this is where I'm going with this. Cause then how do you know that that's good? Like, okay, so you just explained it, right? But then how do you know where you fit into the whole system of fashion as somebody coming from Ohio to LA? And now you're like, okay, I put together this side hustle and people are buying from me.
Right.
Where I come from, right?
Right.
So like, what does it take to be from like, from here, understanding it from this like guttural, instinctual sense,
right,
to like really notching it up and be like, I'm gonna be internationally, because I hear it from you. I heard it from you at the dinner.
Right.
I was like, why does he think he knows what he's talking about? But I'm like, I'm buying into this. And
then I think
the other lady who was sitting, you know, all these people next to us, we were like buying into it. But you were much more on fire because I think we were drinking
everything. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But now I think with the clear mind, I would love to hear you talk about why you think, like, if you're coming from Ohio and you did the side hustle, why do you think that you deserve, what sensibility brings you to that, like, superstar status? Because you seem like you believe in it.
Yeah. I think what it is just like, obviously, you would say inspiration, right? Being from Ohio, my biggest inspiration was Kid Cudi. A kid from Cleveland, he ended up signing with Good Music. He's running around with Kanye West. So you're like, wow, like just like the way he would dress at the time, wearing like hard, crispy APCs with like retro Jordans. So like that was already a person where I'm like, oh wow, he can do it, I can do it. And then also recognition, like being able to go to New York, you know, I was going to fashion weeks in New York, hanging out with certain designers. And then it just, I knew it. Like, you know, obviously when these, it's just like you could hang with these cats in bigger cities, right? I've never really let me being from Ohio stop me from seeing the world, right? I think it also comes back from my background. My dad fought for Vietnam. He was a South Vietnamese pilot. And growing up, I seen a plane every day, a C-47. And when I was younger, I used to see that plane. And I, at a young, as a young child, I knew that the world was bigger than where I'm living at, right? I knew Ohio was just where my ground. And I knew that if I can lift off, I can go to many different places. But when you go to many different places, if you have like that style and grace, people are going to recognize it, right? It doesn't, so it's just, I don't know. It's just after a while you get recognition, you have certain people wearing your stuff. You know, like for LeBron's 40th birthday, he had my hat on, right? And
how did you get it? How did that happen?
To be real, I'm friends with his best friend. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of good connections with LeBron's camp. I actually designed it uninterrupted. So there's that UN hat that he wears all the time. I designed that hat as well. But when he was wearing that hat, that was just like, it felt good, but it's like a job, right? I looked at it like, oh, I'm just working here. It's like, this is supposed to happen. When you design a good product, wow, the person should wear it, right? That's just like, it's supposed to happen. But I think on the 40th birthday, it meant a lot to me. I think everything started off with energy. I was back home in Ohio and, you know, me and my dad got into it and it's that one time I just like crashed out.
What did he say?
We were just talking about like just growing up and, you know, it all started off as a conversation about going to the temple. And then we talked about the kids that I grew up with at the temple. And he got to a point where he just was comparing us to the other people, other kids and other, you know, what they're doing and valuing what their family or success or X, Y, and Z. And I just felt like it was just unfair for him to, you know, cherish other people's, like I've always felt like I'm always happy for others, but you feeling like the comparison part is just unfair. So yeah. I kind of got in an argument with him and I felt bad. You know how our tradition is, you don't really speak out of line with your elders. And then I think on the flight back, I was very disappointed in myself. I did not want to show him that side of me. And then I just was like putting up this energy in the air. Like, I just want, like, my dad is a literal guy. So I was like, I just want something to happen for him to see that his kids do cool things too, right? Like sometimes if you can't really celebrate your child's wins, what's the point of them? You know, so I had to learn at a young age of learning how to keep going outside of like not getting that cheer from your own family. But I just told myself, like, I really wish something was more literal for him to just see that his kids do something cool. It's not a financial thing. It's not about, oh, he's doing this and that. Just, it could be the littlest thing, right? I just wish there was the littlest things in the world that can show him that his kids are doing something. And then the next day, LeBron, I didn't know it was his 40th birthday the next day, and he had my hat on all over the news, you know, SportsCenter, ESPN.
Instagram. And is your dad a big LeBron fan?
Of course. I mean,
anybody from Ohio, right?
Oh, yeah. My dad, especially my brother, in general, our household, we're really big on sports. Like, we love Ohio State Buckeyes. He loves Ohio State basketball. So
that's huge.
Yeah. So growing up, it was just like, that's all we knew was Michael Jordan and just sports in general. And I think that was cool. I feel like the whole family is pretty excited, but I didn't really have to say anything. I'm just like, let this moment speak for itself and just go from there and just keep going. I just always tell myself I got to keep going. Yeah.
So, all right. When you land in LA, you know, I know LA is a tough place.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's LA, New York. It could chew you up and spit you out. You got to know people here. You got to be like dug in. And even then it's a grind, right? Man,
yeah. You can get lost in the sauce out here for sure.
You really can.
Yeah, you can.
You really can. What? Tell me some stories about your fashion adventure here in LA.
So I think when I first moved to LA, I was designing at a company called Forever 21.
Oh,
right.
Right on.
My manager is really cool. Me and him got along really well.
Is it the one just down the street? No?
Yeah. Lincoln Heights. It was in Lincoln Heights. It was my first design job here. And prior to that, I designed for Urban Outfitters in Philadelphia. So Urban Outfitters was my first corporate design job. And then when I left Philly, I applied a couple of jobs. And then when I worked at Forever 21, I can say fast fashion and me, we just don't mix, right? I just was like, I put a lot of thought into design, and then—
That's not what they're looking for.
They're just like, they're all about pumping skew. Yeah. Like, they're all about pumping skews. And I'm really big on energy. And then one day I was like, yo, fuck this place. Like, yeah. I'm trying to get the fuck up out of here. This shit's too fucking much. Like, it's too easy. That's what it was. It was too easy. It was just too easy. It was just, I didn't feel the challenge. It's just like, I don't know. After a while, I just didn't want to be in there. So I just put this energy up in the air. Ironically, I get this phone number from, it says San Francisco. And I was just joking to myself, like, watch this be Levi's calling me.
Wow.
And
weird.
Ironically, it was the recruiter from Levi's. When I left Philly, I applied for a job at Levi's, but the recruiter just kind of went ghost. And then somehow I did the project, had the interview, and boom, I moved to San Francisco. Well, I lived in Oakland, but I was working in San Francisco. So I was in LA for only 8 months. And during that time in LA, it was fucking fun as hell. Like, I was going to Fleas. It's like tons of parties and events. It was just, I did not want to leave. I just felt like, damn, I'm just like, this is such an amazing city. But Levi's was my dream job, right? So I got to Levi's. It was just so surreal. And I was able to do a couple big collaborations. I did a Mario collab. I did a new pair of New Balance. I designed my own shoe through Levi's. I did the men's denim and trucker jackets. So that was amazing. But it's really weird. I've always said this thing is like, make all dreams exist. And I always tell myself, when you reach a level of a, I guess when you reach your dreams, what happens when you reach a dream?
I think you plateau maybe, right?
No, you wake up, right? You wake up, mm-hmm. You have another dream, right? So when I got to Levi's—
I see the question.
Yeah. When I got to Levi's, I think the culture in San Francisco wasn't what I liked. Right. It just didn't really have much for me to do. I felt like I didn't have a lot of fruits of my labor. And working at such a company like that, a big corporation company, it's just certain times, places can make you fall out of love. And it sucks that it's like that, because you get to that place and you think like, oh, this is the end. This is where I belong. And it does. And then one day I was going through some stuff and I get this butterfly tattoo on the side of my head. And I'm like, I don't know. I was like, you know what? This is going to be my butterfly year. I kept saying it's going to be my butterfly year.
What does that mean?
It's just like the year where like, I just been in this cocoon and I'm going to become this butterfly. Like, I'm going to figure out life. Like, I'm going to figure out like that year when I become a butterfly. It's like my butterfly year. And I kept telling myself that. And then leaving Basel, Miami, and I came back home.
Basel, the art show in
Miami. Yeah, Miami in 2019. Mm-hmm. Come back to the Bay. And this year I was different. I was like, I want to dedicate everything into work and, you know, whatever the case may be. And COVID came, you know, and I was like, oh shit. And then we're working from home. Like, everything is changing now. You're like, okay, this is a lot going on. And I get later down the line, a couple months later, I get laid off.
From Levi's.
From Levi's. And it was really weird, but like, it was like the weight came off of my shoulders, right? It was just so much. I was like, man. And I think I moved back to California, moved down to Southern California. My sister at the time was living in Menifee, so I stayed with her for a little bit, like I think like 4 months. And I moved to LA, moved to the place where I'm at now. I'm in this neighborhood. And it's scary, right? Because I was like, shit. Like, I used to, when I first moved here, I was always thinking about like I need to make sure I have a job, rent. The cost of living is so much higher in compared to Ohio. And I just bet on myself. And then, like a lot of the sales start coming in. I was on an HBO show.
Which show were you on?
It was called The Hype, season two.
So were you in front of the camera or you were styling behind?
No, I was literally in front of the camera, just designing. It's like a design competition.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And how'd they find you?
To be honest with you, I manifested it.
Tell me about that. Like, what's that mean?
So I was on a couch one day, and my life is really big on manifestation. Mm-hmm. I think a lot, and I just say it out loud, and it just happens. And
like, you literally say it out loud.
Say it out loud.
I hear so many guys telling me that.
So like,
they literally say it out loud. Yeah, it's the craziest thing.
Yeah, so I know that I have a very unique background, right? I know that my story is very unique. I don't think a lot of people has been through what I've been through, just because it's a lot. And then I just realized one day, like, man, a lot of these designers, they really get a better opportunity when the world knows about their story, their background, who they are, their upbringing. You know, there's just a lot of success to a lot of people that have that opportunity. And I was like, yo, I need an opportunity to let people know about my story, about who I am. And then that's just it. I just mentioned that. And then my boy Jew called me. He's like, yo, I'm watching this show, bro. Like, I think you would probably go crazy on this show. And I was like, oh shit. I don't know nothing about Hollywood or any of this TV stuff, but shit, you know someone, let me know. Like, if I end up winning the competition, I'll cut you a percent. I don't know. This would be good for me to just try to let my story be out, you know? And then one of our friends' sister was a producer. She connected us with the producer for the show. And I did my interview, and, you know, he had to, like, auditions and everything. And then, it was really crazy, but they gave me, like, 12 hours and let me know I was on the show. It was really crazy. But, yeah, that was my opportunity to be on the show. And I think I wasn't prepared like others. Like, I asked others, like, how long did you know you were going to be on the show? They're like, oh, I knew, like, a month ago, 2 months ago, weeks ago. They gave me 12 hours. They called me at, like, I think it was, like, I did like a mental health Zoom call at like 6. Called the producer back, like, yeah, am I on the show? I just left like this mental health call. It blacked out the entire screen. You can't see nobody. And he's like, we don't know yet. I was like, okay. And then I decided to go out anyways that night because I figured, hey, I might be on the show. I might go out for like one last time. And then they called me around like 11 at night and was like, hey, we're going to pick you up at noon tomorrow for the show. And then, you know, congratulations and stuff like that. I try to postpone the show pickup time so I can have time to go buy like fabrics and stuff for the show. But yeah, they wouldn't allow that. But I just end up packing up a whole bunch of clothes to wear on the show. But yeah, I was like,
it's a fashion competition?
Yeah, it's a fashion competition show. Yeah.
And how'd it go?
Man.
Is it out yet?
Yeah, it's on HBO. It's on HBO. To be real with you, I've definitely learned a little bit about Hollywood. I felt like Hollywood, I was honest. You guys never champion anyone as Asian. That's just like something I just told them. But me and the director were kind of cool. Like, I was probably the only one on set that would go up and talk to him because I kind of want to understand his background. And, after the show, he came up to me. He was like, Khan, like, I know you should have won, but you don't want to win this show. I was like,
what's that mean?
I was like, exactly. I was like, but I want this money, right? It's like $150K. Like, I felt like I deserved the money because I felt like I put a lot of, I literally was building looks from scratch while people are taking out their own old patterns and remaking old shit. Like, everything I made were like completely brand new pieces or whatever the case might be. That's how I looked at it. It's a competition. That's how I looked at it. But he was just like, yo, you don't want to win this. And I was like, really? He's like, nobody remembers the winner. They always remember the guy that should have won. And after a while, I just was like, whatever. But I'm starting to see it too. Like, I'm starting to see that, like, I'll go out and meet people at corporate Nike or something. I meet them and then they're like, yo, you should have won the show. We was rooting for you. And yeah, it's, people recognize it too. So I guess it comes in my favor in a sense. Yeah. But still, you always want to win that, but you know.
Right, right. But you know, people in Vietnam who are from Vietnam and are Vietnamese, and they say, why do we Vietnamese Americans have such a problem with our identity? We have, it's called identity angst, right?
Right, right.
We're so uncomfortable with our identity. Why am I always talking about this shit? Me.
Right, right, right.
And I'm hearing it from you, and I hear it from everybody, right?
Right, right, right.
Anybody who's grown up in America, why do we feel like you didn't get a shot? Why do you feel like you didn't get a shot on the show? Like they don't promote Asian Americans. Like, right, why did you right, feel right. that way? You right. Do you really believe that?
No, I do believe that.
Okay, why?
Because I know for a fact that... So there's a scene where I'm a bit emotional on the show, right? And it's really tough because I was like, damn. I'm like, fine on this damn show, looking like, you know, looking like a punk or something. So then when the producers first sent me my... my promo video, like everybody gets their own little video that they post.
And they made you look bad?
Oh man, like everybody's video was all happy and fucking bubbly and shit. And my shit had to be all like dark and semi-sad or whatever. So I told the producers like, I'm not fucking posting this. She's like, are you serious? I was like, no, I'm not posting this. I was like—
You gotta give me better.
She's like, why? I like, bro, like you guys are trying to put this like soft, like really feel like really weak image on me. And I was like, that's not me. I was like, I don't, and I told her, I was like, yo, if you don't repost this, yo, fuck this. I'm not posting this shit. Fuck. And I'm not even promoting this show. I don't really give
a fuck. Did they recut it for you?
Yo, they recut it. And ironically, the guy that recut it DM'd me because he's from Ohio. Some random dude. He's like, yo, I'm from Ohio. He's like, I'm so glad you told them to recut that shit. Cause I was like, why is his video like this? And I think growing up, especially from the Midwest, the type of pedigree that I grew up in, like, I don't take no fun. Like, I would literally talk to somebody like, yo, who are you? Like, I'm not afraid of
this. This is amazing. Because I have, you know, I mean, it's rare to hear somebody really step up to power, right?
Yeah.
And say, you got to change this shit. Because that has been what Hollywood, I think, and I'm just going to speak to it. I think that we have this like real life experience of really being put down.
Yeah.
And playing on stereotypes like a weak Asian man.
Right, right.
And they
right.
want us to roll with that because that shit sells.
No, I mean, to be honest with you, it's been like that since I was a kid. Like my mom would tell me like, Those dudes are way bigger than you. Why don't you just put your head down and walk away and just not say nothing? And then, you know, why
you always grew up did you grow up in a predominantly black neighborhood?
Yeah, yeah.
All black neighborhood.
All black neighborhood. Well, we live in a government housing area, so we also had like a lot of Laos, Viet, and Cambodian homies. A lot of like Eritrean and a little Somalian as well, but a lot of Ethiopian and Eritrean. But I would get in fights, bro. Like I literally would tell my mom, like, no, I'm not doing that. And I think the reason why I was like that, ironically, is when I was younger, my siblings, we didn't live too far from a library, and I think discovering a library card for a little kid might have been the craziest shit ever. And the only movies I rented out was Bruce Lee. Like, he was my hero as a kid because he was a dude that just, like, fought for himself. Like, he literally wouldn't let no one, like, even the way how racist the Japanese were towards them, he was always defend himself. And I think growing up, like, Bruce Lee and Michael Jordan were, like, my idols because it was just, like, you never seen a player go three-peat, dad goes away, and boom, comes back three-peat. Because it's just kind of like... You grew up seeing two fucking dudes that didn't really give a fuck. Like, yeah. They're going to win or they're going to figure it out. And I think also my dad, knowing his background and just seeing, like, him coming to America with, like, three boys, three girls, and his wife. Like, that's a big family to take care of. And
He did it.
And I just think that, like, sometimes a lot of younger guys nowadays, I just feel like, the downfall with certain people is, I mean, certain men nowadays is they haven't been, they don't grow up with a lot of masculinity in their lives due to families and stuff, right? So I feel like for me, I just knew how to like take up for myself. And I speak up for myself. That's all I'm always gonna do is speak up for myself. Cause I like to be fair. Like I'm not like a bully where I like want it my way all the time.
Right, right. When you're showing me like that on a promo, I can't dig it.
I had to tell her like, yo, like I like you. Like I think you're doing your job too. But I'm not promoting this shit. I'm just not. And then they recut it and then sent me another one. Obviously, it worked out. But besides that, I was just like, okay. But that's sometimes like, I mean, sometimes you got to know what you're getting yourself into. And that's just Hollywood in general, right? That's just
yeah, because they're playing on all kinds of imagery and archetypes and leveraging, you know, stereotypes. I mean, that's what sells.
And it's even like this with me and brands. Like me as a designer now, like, I wrote to a big brand for a collaboration and I was very honest with them. Like, look, you guys are always spotlighting the Japanese, the Koreans, you know, Chinese.
Fighting words now.
like little bit of Philippines because of the basketball culture.
Yeah.
But I felt like as a brand, you guys have never once, you know, gave a Vietnamese or Southeast Asian an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like, if I was given this opportunity, I would do it right. That's what I told the brand. But yeah, even like that, you know, it's tough because you don't see a lot of Vietnamese designers going that type of route.
Well, let's talk about that. You know, that's what I'm here to talk about. Yeah. Why haven't we seen it? Why haven't we seen brands coming out of Vietnam or Vietnamese Americans? A lot of us, you know, why don't we see that? Why do we see coming out of the Japanese and Koreans?
I think, you know, obviously, coming from a corporate design background, a lot of places, they measure by, like, geographics of, like, popularity, populations and stuff like that. Like, right now, like, I'm not going to hold you, like, the Koreans are going crazy. They're killing it. But the funniest thing with my brand is my second most biggest supporters are Japanese. Like, I have a lot of Japanese people that buy my stuff and like great relationships with certain people in Japan. And I think it's really weird because these brands, I don't know. I think they're just stuck to that. They're just stuck to that. And it's really hard to say because it's like, for instance, let's just say me and you are both these two Asian guys. They're trying to put for like some weak ass AAPI muff, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like, okay, we got Khan here and we have you here, but they're most likely going to pick you because you are from the pedigree of living in Los Angeles because your outreach is much bigger than mine. Mm. And then for me, it's like, oh, he's from the Midwest. It's not that much people there in general compared to the West Coast. So they'll pick you. Oh. That's just how it is.
So it's not even a talent thing.
No.
Or it's not even an aesthetic thing. That
it's just all about that.
Geos.
But it takes for me to do something like I did at CompleXCon, where I did a collaboration with Mitchell & Ness. I did like these Mitchell & Ness, and it shit just took off. Like all the athletes were pulling up, all these rappers were coming, all these people were coming, influencers and stuff like that. So then now, the group that I seen at the company, whatever, their group, they seen it in real life. So then now I'm getting like a little, hey, how you doing? What's going on? Because sometimes it's just like, the worst part about a lot of these corporations is they don't hire people like you that's on ground zero, right? They hire these corporate workers that they just sit there on their computers all day. They don't even know what's going on. And they don't have the time to be running around figuring out who's hot.
On the ground, yeah.
On the ground. So they got to measure by geos and metrics and shit like that. Like, okay, who can he can reach outreach? Who's his reach to? Who does he know? Where's he from? That's how they just measure their stuff. But there's going to be rarely certain places have the guys that's on the ground. Wow. But most of the guys that, you know, I'm going to be respectfully, but like most of these dudes that work for these corporations are completely cornballs. They're just corny motherfuckers. You meet the corniest motherfuckers. When I worked at Levi's, the last thing I ever told someone was I worked for Levi's. Like, I was like, yo, my name is Khan. My Instagram is made by NGO. I do this, I do this, I do that. And then maybe at the end, I'll tell them I worked at Levi's.
Why?
Because I don't want people to treat me a certain way because of my job. Mm. And I don't want people, like, the worst thing I ever seen was seeing people treating others bad because they worked at a certain company. Because my analogy is like, you just work there. You don't own the company. You're just an employee. You come in, you do your hours, you're out. You have a manager that tells you what to do. So you're not really that bossed up realistically. And if you are a senior or something, you have a director. So you still have a boss. And if you are a director, you still have the VP of design that boss you around. So at the end of the day, until you're your own boss, then you can be a little bit more confident when you step out. But I've always believed that everyone has to treat each other equally. I don't care if you're the VP of a certain company. Like, if you are an asshole, then I'm like, yo, you fuck him. Like, he's an asshole. I don't want to really fuck with him.
Have you been to Vietnam?
Haven't been back since I was like 16, 17.
Okay, so it's changed a lot.
Yeah, it's changed a lot. I'm actually going to go back hopefully in a few weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you track any fashion designers from Vietnam or Vietnamese people around the world? Do you track anything that fashion people do?
Yeah, so I followed a few couple of stores in Vietnam. Shout out to my boy Tony. He has a shop called Hidden. He's also Vietnamese, but he's out in the OC area. And he's told me about a few people. There's a couple of brands I just recently followed.
Like who?
I don't know. I just literally was on Instagram.
I don't mean to put you on the
spot. Yeah, I don't really remember the name too well because I just noticed it, but they just had Blackpink wear their whole...
Yeah, business. And the reason I asked that is because if we in the business of culture, like you're in the business of fashion, I'm in the business of culture, I'm in the business of needing to know all this, right?
Right,
can't even list off a few, me personally.
Right.
Then we got a lot of work to do, right?
Yeah. Truthfully, I can say that, like, I do have a lot of work to do. A lot of the brands that I do honestly follow in Asia is more in Japan.
Right.
A few, obviously, there's a few in Korea.
Why do we follow Japanese and Korean brands, and there's hundreds of fashion brands in Vietnam.
I think due to one, me being from the Midwest growing up, and I think idolizing Japanese designers and stuff like that, like, you know, Bape, Visvim, all these different brands, Needles, like you see that more. And I just never got a chance to really notice too much about Vietnamese brands. I have to say, like, a lot of the Vietnamese brands that I see that are really making a lot of noise is, I see a lot of women's brands. It's like really going crazy. And sometimes I don't check for that as well. But I think that's the reason why I want to go to Vietnam, because I want to go out there and also connect with people. But I had a situation, and it gave me kind of a scare.
What was the situation?
I did a bomber jacket paying homage to my dad. And, you know.
No, this is going.
Yeah, and the comment section wasn't that, like, I didn't really get a good,
response.
All right.
I don't even know what that post looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just know.
But I got into a fact where, like, I've grown out of that mentality.
Okay, good, like, good. Yeah. Well, let's talk about that mentality, because I think that's a very important thing to talk about. And we're probably talking about flags, and we're talking about sides, and we're talking about bomber jackets. That's military. Bomber jackets are a U.S. Signature.
Right.
So I think we come out of these families of South Vietnamese American families, all gung-ho military, but as we start to move on in the world, we start to see that there's a much, much, much bigger and much more complicated picture, right?
Yeah.
And did you learn something from that experience?
Yes. So recently watched this Netflix documentary about the war.
The Turning Point one?
The recent one.
I translated all the Vietnamese to English on that.
I can honestly say, ironically, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. It's so funny that I worked for Levi's because prior to, I believe I was like 21 at the time. It was a long time ago. I was chilling in Cincinnati at one of my ex-girlfriend's house. I don't know. I was just up late and I watched 60 Minutes. And it was about Levi's. And it just talked about the history of Levi's. And me being this denim nerd, I'm like, I'm so fascinated with this. And then it talks about how Levi's left like the Union and Made in USA wasn't established no more. Mm. And then it ended up going to like China, especially in Vietnam, right? So I was like, I noticed that the years, the timeline. Mm-hmm. And then as I get older, you know, you look at like, you know, I remember high school year, my dad would take me to school and he was complaining about gas prices. Damn, gas is going up. Gas is going up. I'm like, oh, how? It said like 97 cents. And I'm this is back in Ohio. So, but my, at the time, he's like, you know, a couple of weeks ago, it was like 60 cents. And I was just like, oh. And then I think by end of senior year, what like say, I was like less than 6 months, gas was $3.99. So then you started noticing that that whole war was about oil. So then now I look at like the Vietnam War, I realize like, oh, that war was just pretty much a way to extort my country, labor. And I just kind of realized, like, I think all sides were involved, in my opinion. I think all sides were involved because when America went to France to have that secret meeting, that was the meeting. And I think the reason why I feel like us, in a sense, we're a little bit more educated with a lot of these things is because back there, they don't really want you to know that, right? Back in the motherland. But as I get older, I just start realizing like war just is not fun at all, right? Even like my little brother and, you know, we go through family problems and I always tell him like, you know, give so-and-so some grace. Like we're a product of war. Like it just comes from a lot of mental shit. Mm-hmm. Like we go through a lot. Our siblings, our family go through a lot. Am I going to represent the South? Of course. That's the place that my dad fought for. And, you know, I know that there was a place of love and peace, you know. But now as I got older, it's like, I don't want to just dislike someone because of that.
Yeah.
I have nothing to do with that. Like, we're just
a totally different generation.
Totally different generation.
We should be able to, like, honor the dead, and we should be able to, like, respect the loss that was lost. But at the same time, I'm always on this mission of healing, and I'm always on this mission of, like, bridging, right?
Right, we got to bridge it together.
We got to bridge it. And you know, it's a complicated thing, man. It's a super complicated thing.
It's like, so for instance, the good way to explain it is when I go to Japan, like Japan is, you know, one of my favorite, Tokyo is one of my favorite cities. It's number one. It changed my life. It helped me so much. But it's like when you go to Japan, they love American culture. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if you could see the U.S. and Japan, Tokyo kind of like become one, because mm-hmm. obviously the soldiers that are there, they're protecting the country. It just lets you know, like, solitary is where it's at. Like, being able to become one is really where it's at.
And I think Vietnamese people in Vietnam have a lot easier time loving Vietnamese diaspora people than the other way around.
Of course, yeah.
There's much more younger people in Vietnam who have no recollection of the war and whatever. You could argue that the government sort of like represses all that, right, whatever. Right. So they have this like very like loving kind of like, we ain't got no beef with you guys. Right. But we in the West have been like, you know, living with free speech of like our parents and, you know, that generation saying like, that's the evil, you know, empire on the other side. So we are like indoctrinated in this way of, and I say at this point I'm 50.
Right,
I got to really be able to like take a minute and look at all the other 50-year-old people who grew up alongside me and 55-year-old professors who teach at these universities and a little bit more liberal and a little bit more open and see what they got to say.
Right.
And then also hear and respect the former military officers. I was a U.S. Marine as well. So
okay, yeah.
I get all of it. I get all the complexities of it. But at the same time, I just want to go at all of this with some love. That's all. And if people are going to attack us just for being like in love with the Vietnamese people all over and just like be very simple about it,
yeah,
fuck it.
Right.
That's my position.
Yeah, I think what it is like how I explain it right now is like, it's like a religion in a sense. It's like, when I see people disliking certain people because of their religion,
right?
It to me, it bothers me because I'm like, just let them be whatever, let their belief be whatever their belief is. And I just never really understood it because it's like one time I took my ex-girlfriend to our temple and she didn't really want to come in. She at the time she was Catholic. You know, she is Catholic, I'm sorry, but she was Catholic. She came in and then my monk just told her, like, hey, like, if you guys ever get married, don't let it happen to be about religion. You should tell Khan to go to church with you and learn about, let him learn about your religion.
Totally.
And if you ever want to learn about Buddhism, we're open. You can come visit us too. But if you guys be with each other, just be with each other. Yeah. Don't let the religion get in the way.
Absolutely.
And I feel like with what's going on, like, over there and over here, it's just like a religion thing. It's just like, in a sense, it's like, I've been, this is years ago. I went on a date with this girl in Japan. She was from Britain. So some British girl I met out there. We went on a little dinner date. And the whole time I was explaining to her about how like, damn, like, Tokyo really loves America. Like, I see a lot of U.S. flags, Americana venture shops everywhere. So then she got, like, offended, and she felt like, no, they like the British more. And I was like, nah, like, if you really look around, like, it's U.S. flags everywhere. But I had to explain to her, like, look, I'm just letting you know, I'm not, like, this super American, I love America guy. Like, there's a lot of shit about America I just not like. Yeah. And sometimes America does a lot of whack stuff where you don't even feel that great seeing that flag sometimes. Mm. You just feel like, it just, especially with like the president, a lot of stuff is going on, you know what I mean? But I try to explain to her like, hey, like, I don't really give too much fucks about like America. I'm not like this super, I am as American guy. And then I just was just told like, you know, this whole dinner is getting uncomfortable because I don't care. I'm just living life. Yeah. And I think that sometimes when you do see certain people that are so involved in that, like the flag, the South Vietnamese flag. Now you see all these older guys and the way how they act or certain things that they do, it's like, I don't even like fuck with it sometimes. Like when they stormed the Capitol
with the flag, and it was some
Vietnamese people that own a pho tank restaurant in Chicago that I've been to. I was like, holy shit, that was them that did it. Yeah, and I was just like, damn. So it's just like, to me, I was just like at a point where I'm like, okay, well, you know, I'm still gonna love that flag and embrace what it is, but as now I'm getting older, like it's just like I'm not gonna take this and tear anyone down. Like
I'm gonna say something super
controversial. We should all be together.
I'm gonna say something super controversial. Somebody literally called me today and was telling me about some like inviting me to some event. And that person was like, man, and they're you know, they come from where we come from,
right,
you know,
right.
Kids of the South Vietnamese government officials, right?
Right.
And she's like, damn, I'm more allergic to the yellow flag now than I am to the red flag. And that's crazy shit.
Right.
That's some crazy shit to say.
Yeah.
But it's because of shit like January 6th that us young people are like, we don't identify with that shit. That's just like way out there. But it's not even that black and white either, right?
Right.
Because the minute we start talking about flags, it becomes really complicated.
Right.
But at the same time, it's like, where are we going to be in 10 years when the men's Vietnam soccer team wins? Are you not going to cheer for the Vietnamese team? I mean, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's just one of those things where we really have to think about who we are becoming. So a question I've been asking my guests is, in 2026, where do you think the culture of Vietnamese people all over the world is evolving into?
So what I've been noticing is, it's funny enough, my homie that is CJ Stroud's manager, recently he posted that he was in Vietnam, and he was like, he's also black. That's the funniest story. I was like, yo, what you doing in Vietnam? He's like, yo, like Vietnamese food is like one of my favorite foods. So I just felt like I wanted to celebrate Vietnam during Tết. And hearing him say that to me, bro, I was so embarrassed. Cause I was like, damn, that's what I should be doing. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what I should be doing. And I think sometimes when something becomes popular, and I guess it's like, oh wow, people are coming here now. I think people are starting to realize like how unique and dope Vietnam is. Mm. And I gotta say, like, the people are there, they're making it look fun. And then you got, you know, obviously a lot of these brands is popping up. You see a lot of these landmarks that's happening and stuff like that. I feel like Vietnam is gonna become a place where people are very interested in visiting. And when you're when you become an interesting place, that's when people discover.
Yeah.
Right. So I feel like there's going to be a lot of more discoveries, and maybe a lot of more guys like myself that's going to be able to go back home and embrace Vietnam and the culture and stuff. I feel like that's something that I haven't got a chance to do as much, and I really want to make it into a place that when I looked at Tokyo, like I think for my cousins in Vietnam, they're like, damn, this food been in a, went to Tokyo like 5 times. He's there all the time.
And never Vietnam.
But now he don't go to Vietnam, and I think.
I used to have problems with people
you. Yeah.
But no, I don't, because I understand the complexity.
Yeah, and then also the thing was like growing up in the Midwest, it's like.
It wasn't cool to be Vietnamese.
No, it's not about being cool about Vietnamese. It's about like just the traveling side of going to Vietnam.
That's a,
like, it's like you got to travel all the way to California.
How do you get to Tokyo? You got to still go to California to get to Tokyo.
I get that. But I'm just saying, like, speaking, I like being in Los Angeles.
Yeah, because like, you can skip real quick.
It's closer to Asia. Yeah. That's my thing. Like, it's close to like Asia. New York City is my favorite city ever. Yeah, I've always wanted to live in New York City. That was my ultimate dream, is to be able to live in New York. But now someone asked me, like, why do you love LA so much? And my answer is because it's closer to Asia. It's just closer to Asia. Yeah. And, yeah, I'm definitely going to be. I plan on going to Vietnam with intentions of going back and forth. I want to make it more of a hub. I want to make it like the hub that I should have made it.
Music to my ears. Yeah. You make that place Tokyo to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's
and then Thailand too. I have some good friends in Thailand, and I want to go check out Thailand.
Thailand is our happy cousin. Thailand is a happy
cousin. Thailand is the country that just. I mean, obviously they're going through some little stuff now, but they've always been a country that just was like, we're with Buddha. We just chilling.
We're chilling. Man, I look forward to whatever you do in the future. And I think let's get you back on when you, you know, when you're ready to put out a line or you got some big developments. This is what I'm here for.
Yeah. The line is coming out. Actually, I have a line that's coming out. I'm working on some stuff right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's coming. This is one of the jackets I made. So the idea of the jacket is very simple. A lot of soldiers back then used bomber jackets to make their souvenir jackets. Yeah. And my thing is, if I was a soldier at the time, I would have made a mechanics jacket, because me and being from the Midwest, we wear a lot of like mechanics jackets. Yeah. Exactly. So this is more like a work jacket, but a souvenir at the same time.
But it's very Japanese though too. Like I feel like the Japanese jackets have like, you know, these patches, right?
No. Believe it or not, anything that you've seen that the Japanese has put on their jackets, they all like that style. Well, it all started in the Korean War. A lot of those jackets were also like made, but a lot of the Vietnam bomber jackets, if you do come across a real Vietnam bomber jacket, they go from thousands of dollars.
Really? Because, and they have these patches.
Well, this is
embroidery,
but in Vietnam, the ladies would embroider by hand. Oh. They'll be hand embroidered. So even though I go to Japan, certain stores will have a real official souvenir jacket, but they'll want like $2,000 to $3,000 for it. Yeah, it goes for a lot.
Oh.
Just because of the age and the time that they spent into making the jacket. Because all of that stuff is all hand embroidered.
Got it.
But this is like a jacket that it mimics a hand embroidery. That's the thing. The stitching is very like mimicking.
Very cool, man. And what's the name of the brand?
So my brand name is just NGO.
Okay.
And the acronym stands for Nothing Grows Overnight.
I love that.
And the brand is just pretty much about my life. Like it's just like if my life was put into a movie or a clothing line, it'd be like this.
Mm.
And I think it's just like a way of just saying like growing up, people really like, it's funny speaking about it, like growing up being in America, like people question, you do question yourself sometimes. Yeah. Like they fuck up your name, that everything's all this and that. So then I wouldn't say this, but it's like, it made me feel like uncomfortable when people would like say my name or mess it up.
Yeah.
It just felt like, oh man. So my whole analogy is creating my last name into a brand and it making it to someone, making it to something that you love.
Yeah. Yeah.
That you want to wear. So yeah, that's the whole ethos of everything.
I love it, man.
Yeah.
Appreciate you.
Thanks
so
for having
much,
me for sure.
Yeah. Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.